This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. This hour, we're talking scooters. Who'd have thunk we'd spend an hour on scooters here on All Sides with Ann Fisher? But as you probably have seen, they are everywhere. Those motorized scooters are all over downtown Columbus and the OSU campus, also venturing out to other areas of the city and area as well. There are two companies in town that are providing these scooters, Bird and Lime. You use your phone and a credit card for the most part to just grab a scooter and go. It costs very little to use that scooter for a few minutes, but as easy as that they are to use, they are causing some problems. What do folks on sidewalks think about them? The scooters are weaving in and out of pedestrians on sidewalks. If they're not on the sidewalks, they're on the street. Should motorized scooters have to be licensed? Should they have to wear a helmet? Should there be limits? Should there be speed limits? All questions the city is having to figure out on the fly as we get used to this new disruptive technology. That's what we're talking about here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson. Joining us by phone is Columbus Dispatch City Hall reporter Rick Ruan. You have been covering the scooter issue. Rick, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Can we call you the scooter correspondent, among other things?
That's fine. It's probably the nicest thing somebody's called me today.
Let me first ask, have you tried these yet?
Yeah, I have tried them a few times already. I park maybe 5 or 6 blocks away from our office, and one day when I was walking in, I came across one that was pretty close to my parking lot, and I said, why not? So I downloaded the app and was pretty much loaded up and on the scooter within 5 minutes or so. It's really easy to use if you're familiar with using your smartphone and having your credit card linked through your smartphone.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind me asking, how much did it cost for those 5 blocks?
It was maybe $2.
Yeah,
in that range, I think it's about $1 to get it going, and then 15 cents per minute that you're on it, and they go fast enough if you're on sidewalks and catch the crosswalk just right, you can get where you're going pretty quickly. You can use bike lanes too.
Yeah, I was in Austin, Texas last week, and there was a guy on a scooter, and he was going great, but then he'd get to an intersection. And it was a really long light, so you had to wait. And I was like, this thing ain't working for you right here, buddy. Anyway, Rick Ruan from the Columbus Dispatch joins us here on All Sides. We're talking about these electric scooters that have descended upon the city. Let's start for – I just have visions of trucks coming into Columbus at 1 o'clock in the morning and just depositing these all over town one day, and all of a sudden they were there. Is that what happened?
More or less, if you talk to people within City Hall, they'll tell you that they got some notice about a day ahead of time, and then the next day they were everywhere. So the city had been talking with Lime quite a bit. They had already had a memorandum with that company because Lime initially came to Columbus with just your standard two-wheel pedal bikes. You see them primarily along Cleveland Avenue going up through Linden, and they were going to hold off on scooters, but then Bird appeared overnight and Lime soon followed. And ever since then, the city has been grappling with what do we do? How do we regulate these things?
What problems are there? Problems that the scooters are causing, and if so, what are the main complaints that people have about them?
Sure. The biggest complaint that I have heard is around safety. So should the scooters be ridden on the street? Should they be ridden on the sidewalk, in bike lanes, on bike paths? And there's not a lot of clarity around that right now. The city attorney's office has said that existing law is ambiguous, and so right now the scooters can legally be ridden anywhere. So you see them on sidewalks, you see them on streets. Sometimes you'll see somebody riding in the bike lane, like you were describing, sit at the light, decide that they don't want to do that, and now suddenly they're in the crosswalk and on the sidewalk. So they're weaving in and out. They're weaving between pedestrians on downtown sidewalks. Downtown sidewalks around lunchtime are really crowded, and you see people trying to weave on the scooters. That creates a safety issue. So I think the biggest complaint right now is just that there's not a lot of clarity in the law. There's a lot of confusion about where they can and can't be ridden, and people are just sort of left to wonder.
Has the city ever had, I mean, I remember the Segways. Remember those? They didn't ever, never caught on. I know they do Segway tours around town. But
yeah.
The Segways kind of popped up. They were electric motorized, basically scooters. The city really hasn't had to deal with anything like this before.
That's true. The city hasn't had to deal with anything like motorized scooters. The city ordinance does prohibit riding a bicycle on the sidewalk, but it's pretty specific within the law what you're not allowed to ride. And I think that's where some of the ambiguity comes in, is that it doesn't explicitly outlaw motorized scooters. And so it's something that city officials are looking at right now. The set of rules that were released on Tuesday is just a first step. That's exactly how the mayor described it, a first step at regulating scooters, and they're going to continue to look at what possibilities are out there. One of the challenges right now is that the Columbus City Council takes a recess for the month of August, and until they come back into session, the city can't institute any new ordinances. The council would have to approve that. What was released on Tuesday are simply rules and regulations, things that the administration can do without council's approval. So council returns on September 17th. I think, soon after that and into the fall here, we'll probably see some additional ordinances come down. Where they come down is still very much wide open, but I expect we'll probably see some things here in the next few months.
We're talking about those motorized scooters we're seeing all over town with Rick Ruan, the City Hall reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. If you'd like to join the conversation, do you have a scooter story? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Rick, let's get to those rules. They appeared almost as quickly or as suddenly as the scooters did. All of a sudden, I opened the paper, and there they were. The next morning, the city just kind of had this long list. What are the big ones? What are the ones that that caught your eye as far as the rules that will have the most impact on this industry right away?
Sure. So the rules that the city released on Tuesday, for the most part, govern where you can leave the scooters and where they should be stored. That's the way the city is describing them, as storage rules. The big things that kind of caught my eye is that the city is going to require these companies to have a permit with the city. They'll have to pay for that permit, about $500 each, and then $75 per scooter. Accepting that permit makes essentially a contract with the city. And so if the companies receive that permit and decide not to follow these rules, the city can round them up and impound them and tell the scooter companies to come pick up their property. So that's pretty significant. The other thing that really jumped out to me is just where the city is telling these companies they have to offer the scooters if they're going to be in Columbus. Right now, if you bring up one of those apps, you can see that the scooters are very much concentrated in the center of the city, in the Central Business District, around downtown, and really in the areas rimming downtown.
Yeah. OSU campus has a lot of them up there.
Sure,
as well. Yeah,
absolutely. But the city wants to see the scooters also offered in some of the disadvantaged neighborhoods of Columbus. They call them opportunity neighborhoods. These are the neighborhoods that the mayor's office has identified as needing some additional help. And so they are telling these scooter companies that they have to keep 20% of those scooters in those neighborhoods. And the city is going to monitor that, because they are going to require these companies to also provide really a trove of data about where the scooters are kept. They're going to require real-time access to location data for the scooters so that they can more or less police where these things are going.
Has there been any pushback on that? I mean, this seems like the city telling a private business where they can do business. I mean, they don't require Kroger to put their grocery stores in opportunity neighborhoods. Why should they require Lime and Bird to have their scooters in these neighborhoods?
If there's pushback, I'm not aware of it. When I asked the companies on Tuesday to comment on the rules, the response that I received back was that they intend to abide by them. So at least Bird and Lime initially are accepting of the rules that the city has laid out. Now, maybe more companies come in and they have a bigger issue with it, but the city is going to limit the number of companies that can come in to 8 and limit the number of scooters per company to 500. We're not really sure how that stacks up with what either company has in Columbus already. But the city also gave itself some discretion that if the company asks for a waiver of the 500, if they want more, that the city can evaluate that and make a decision on it. But at least initially, if you're permitted, you can only have up to 500 devices.
One of the rules that caught my eye, and I think it goes to this whole thing of trying to make this transportation system accessible to all, which is certainly a worthy goal. I don't want to take anything away from the goal of this. One of them is these scooters have to be – you have to be able to access these scooters if you don't have a credit card. And is that also what they're trying to do, is trying to – folks who don't have a credit card can also take advantage of this service?
Absolutely. That's the goal of that. And, Mike, that caught my eye as well when I first went through the rules. What I was surprised to learn was that both of those companies already had systems in place for that very issue. I did not realize that you could purchase. It's essentially like a gift card. Yeah. That you can then register through the smartphone app. Now, you're still going to need a smartphone, but they have prepaid cash cards out there that you can purchase so that you can use the system without a credit card.
And Bird told us that these cash cards are available at grocery stores and markets, and they say that it's ubiquitous availability of these cash cards. So that's good to know that you don't need to qualify for a credit card to take advantage of this if you want to. Rick Ruan, City Hall reporter from the Columbus Dispatch, joins us here on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about scooters around town. Just a few more minutes with Rick. The process now, these were the first rules that the city has laid out. First, did they model these rules from other cities? Because Columbus is not the first town to have these scooters. Did they sort of copy and paste from another city around?
I think that at least what I've been told is that the city looked at several different areas that have looked to regulate the scooters and tried to pick and choose what they considered to be the best practices among those, finding the things that were both right for Columbus and that made the most sense to them. The Department of Public Service, which handles a lot of the transportation issues for the city, was kind of the lead on developing this, but they also have worked with several other city departments, my understanding the city attorney's office, Department of Public Safety, and others to kind of determine what would make the most sense. And those groups continue to talk as they look to what ordinances city council could pass in the future and what other rules and regulations they may add to this in the future.
But ultimately, Rick, city council has to pass these ordinances for them to really have any teeth.
For ordinances, the rules and regulations that we're talking about that the city released earlier this week do not require council approval.
Okay.
The administration can implement without council approval, but any change to city code is really what we're talking about. If we're looking at keeping the scooters off the sidewalks, for instance, that would require council approval.
Rick Ruan, City Hall reporter from the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we'll dig a little deeper into this whole scooter thing, find out what's going on in other cities, what other cities are doing to try to regulate them, make them safe, how other cities are coping with these motorized scooters that we see everywhere on city streets around Central Ohio. When All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann. This hour, we're talking about the influx of electric scooters in Columbus and how the city plans to regulate them. Vox writer Umair Ifan recently wrote about the invasion of electric scooters in American cities. We'll post a link to that article at our website, wosu.org/allsides. Umair Ifan joins us now by phone. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Umair, what are we seeing? How many cities have these scooters? We're not alone, obviously. Columbus is we're not the pioneer scooter territory, are we?
No, they launched in the West Coast, and to date they operate in 65 cities across the U.S. and are also launching in other cities in Europe right now.
Who was first? Can we claim someone being first?
I think Santa Monica, California, was the epicenter of this. Santa Monica is the headquarters of Bird, one of the largest scooter companies right now, and so they've been at the forefront of the deployment and then also the backlash and then the backlash to the backlash.
So let's get to that. What are cities experiencing? Are they all experiencing the same issues?
Some of them, yeah. I mean, the big issue has been that the scooter companies have to follow the same model as Uber and Lyft in terms of, you know, seek forgiveness rather than ask permission. And so some city officials just woke up one morning and saw these scooters perched on sidewalks and people riding them around, while others have been kind of a lot more proactive, warning these scooter companies that they can't do business until they get approval from their city councils first. And so New York City right now has, you know, put a hold on the scooters and is telling them that, you know, you have to work with the city council before you can start deploying them here. But San Francisco, for example, they saw them appear just one night in March, and then in June, all the scooters were, you know, just raptured off the streets. They were completely removed because the city council banned them completely. So there's been sort of a mix in terms of different experiences with these scooters and different kinds of public reception to them.
So that's an unusual business strategy to just drop them in and see what happens. But that obviously that's intentional, and it's worked in many cities, although they've had some hiccups.
Right. I mean, I think part of the strategy here is they want to generate customers and build, you know, loyalty before they have to start lobbying city officials for, you know, the permits and regulations that they need to operate. And by building a base of demand, they say that they can build a lot more clout when they actually do start going above board and trying to get, like, the official documents that they need to operate. And so it's a strategy that somewhat works, but, I mean, it can also very much backfire. You know, San Francisco public opinion polling shows that they have a lot lower standing there than scooters do in other cities, and that's partly because of how they've been rolled out.
Does the density of the city matter as well? I'm guessing New York and San Francisco. There's a lot more people on the sidewalks in those cities than there are in Columbus, Ohio.
Right. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, scooter companies all say that, of course, you're supposed to be riding in the street and not on the sidewalk. But access to public transit is a big deal as well. One of the pitches that the scooter companies are using is that they fulfill the last mile of transit, meaning the distance between your home and the metro stop or a bus stop, rather than trying to get you all the way to your destination. So they're saying that they're, you know, kind of filling in the gaps. And in cities that have good public transit or where transit is not quite as good as it needs to be, this is a good way of just kind of filling in those blanks. And that's where they've seen a lot of traction.
Yeah, in Columbus, it certainly fits the bill on that score, that we have bus service, but we don't have the same public transportation infrastructure that, say, New York or even San Francisco has at this point. We want to get to a call here from Abby. Abby from Columbus is on the air. Abby, you say this reminds you of a service from the 70s?
In the late 60s, early 70s, there was a thing called the mini scooter, and It lasted probably, I'd say, a couple years. These were little teeny tiny motorcycle type bicycles. They were very low to the ground, really popular among teenagers, and they didn't really have any requirements by the city. Consequently, a lot of people got killed on them.
Were these
and
what
eventually
we mini,
they were outlawed.
Were these what we called mini bikes? Remember those mini bikes?
Yeah, they called them mini bikes and sometimes mini.
Yeah.
If they didn't go very fast, probably, I don't think they went any faster than probably about 15 miles an hour.
Yeah. But, all right.
I was a teenager at the time. I rode one.
All right. Thanks, Abby. Umair, the difference, of course, is you had to buy that mini bike, or your parents had to buy it for you, and it was yours to keep. And, you know, they weren't as ubiquitous. While they were popular, they weren't as ubiquitous as these scooters, and weren't open to all to ride. That's the difference here.
Right, and I think that the caller makes a good point that, you know, this idea of a scooter or, you know, urban transport device is not new. I mean, kick scooters have been around since the 90s, and then these electric scooters have been around for a few years. The key innovation here is the business model that you don't have to own it, and that you can also pick it up wherever you find one, and you can leave it wherever you, not quite wherever you want to, but pretty close to your destination. And the smartphones and, like, the mobile infrastructure has developed to the point that, you know, you can easily do that, where you can easily track where the scooters are going, and you can easily bill for using them. And that's kind of why we're seeing the emergence now. We see a confluence of both the technology and the demand.
And that the technology is cheaper for the companies than, say, the Segways, which these remind me of the Segways. Those were expensive to build and to maintain. These scooters, I don't know how much they cost to build and maintain, but they're certainly not as expensive, and they're more, quote, disposable than a Segway would be.
That's right. A Segway, when it first launched, was about $5,000. And, you know, because of that business model, you had to pay that much money up front. So a lot of people just use them as, you know, sort of a luxury item, whereas the scooters, they're about $500 if you want to actually buy one. But, you know, to get on a scooter and ride one of these rental scooters, it's literally $1.15 a minute thereafter. So the barrier to entry is a lot lower, which means that, you know, even scooter skeptics can try one out and perhaps win, be won over by these devices.
We're talking scooters here on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to Umair Irfan, staff writer for Climate and Energy with Vox. He's done a lot of research and some writing on the scooter trend across the country. Want to bring another voice into the conversation here, Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law, frequent guest here on All Sides with Ann Fisher, Steve Magus. Welcome back, Steve.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks.
As a bicycle aficionado and someone who's very involved in bicycle law, what do you think of these scooters?
I like the scooters. They're a fantastic little device. I agree with your other caller that the business model is unique, but it works for them. They can, you know, they can't do this with big heavy objects that have to be registered and licensed. But for little scooters, they can go in. They're not doing this at the state level, which would be very difficult for them to go to the state of Ohio or the state of Indiana and get some state law passed. So dropping them in and then dealing one-on-one with each individual city is a smart move, I think, on their part.
As a bicycle rider, what do you think of these scooters?
As a bicycle rider, I like the scooters. I like the concept. I like the dockless to some degree. In Cincinnati, we have the red bikes, which are docked.
Yep.
And they're very popular, and the just as they are all over the country. They also have a tremendous safety record on the bike end of it.
Yeah.
That's the concern that I have with the scooters from a safety perspective is they go pretty fast. They zip around, and then people are used to riding bikes. The big, heavy rental bikes that you get are not, Tour de France bikes. I mean, you're not going to get 20 miles an hour out of them. So it's very easy just to ride around on these scooters and, you know, as somebody said earlier, zip in and out of traffic. And that's the issue I'm concerned about is safety.
Now, bicycles aren't allowed, as we heard from Rick Ruan from the Dispatch earlier, bicycles are not allowed on sidewalks. But these scooters, the rules are unclear as to where they should be operating. The companies want them on the street, but most of the ones I've seen have been on the sidewalks.
Sidewalks are tough, and in the most big cities in Ohio ban bicycles from sidewalks. The state law doesn't say anything about that. In fact, it specifically says the city can do whatever they want. So each city can have its own bicycle-related sidewalk law and scooter-related sidewalk law.
Umair Irfan from Vox, what are cities doing about the whole sidewalk problem? What are they What kind of rules are they imposing? Are they imposing rules to keep them off the sidewalks?
Right. I mean, most cities do have ordinances in place that motor vehicles aren't allowed on sidewalks, and some of them are writing tickets for scooter riders that are being found riding on the sidewalks. But the key issue is that, you know, for a scooter, you can't really park it in the street. You can't park it on a side in a parking spot for a car. So at some point, you're going to be on the sidewalk, whether that's parked, whether you're starting or ending your journey there. And ideally, you know, the scooter companies will recommend that you ride in bike lanes, but, you know, bike infrastructure isn't that great either. So at some point in your journey, you're either going to be riding on the sidewalk or in open traffic. So that's kind of it shows sort of the gap in infrastructure there is for these kinds of devices.
I was just going to say the riding in traffic really doesn't bug me in the cities, because most big city, Columbus, I'll just say from Columbus on up, the city traffic speeds are not a whole lot greater than what the scooters go. So you're going 15 in the city on a bike or a scooter. You can blend in with traffic. You go from red light to red light, and that shouldn't be a problem. There's a fear factor, both in cycling and in, I'm sure, the scooters. I don't want to mix it up with these cars, and that's an issue as well.
Helmets. Umair, any helmet laws with regards to scooters? I mean, that'd be another hurdle for these companies if they had to provide a helmet every time somebody rented one of these scooters. That would be impossible.
Right. Well, Bird actually does have a helmet program where if you contact them, they will ship a helmet to you if you just pay the shipping cost. And a lot of states and some cities have rules that, you know, if you're under 18 on a bicycle or on a scooter, you're required to wear a helmet. But very few actually have laws that mandate you wear a helmet on these devices, but all the scooter companies do recommend it. And if you log into one of these apps before you rent one, they usually flag that you should be wearing a helmet.
So Bird will ship you a helmet free of charge as long as you pay the shipping?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's interesting. I don't think a lot of people know that. I have not seen a lot of scooter riders wearing helmets, I'll be honest.
No, and you know, the whole helmet issue is a you know, it's all about safe crashing versus safe driving. So, you know, on the cycling side, we've kind of fought mandatory helmets. We recommend it, but the Dutch do it very effectively. Very few people wear helmets, and as long as the traffic algorithm works the way it should, you know, you shouldn't need a helmet. But
how about, Steve, how about the bike paths? Columbus has a rich and growing, very good system of bicycle paths. It's really expanded over the past 10 years or so. And I think that people who use those bike paths are very courteous or respectful. The bikers get along with the runners and the walkers and the dog walkers for the most part.
To some degree, yeah.
Can scooters live in that world?
I think they can live in that world. We're as part of, I sit on the board of the Ohio Bicycle Federation. We've been working with some e-bike companies as well, because there's questions about whether e-bikes can be ridden on trails or not. There's a bill percolating that's ready to go in the
e-bikes
state
are motorized bikes.
Yeah, they're like little electric motors, and yeah. So there's a bill pending in the state house right now. That hasn't come out yet. It's all set up and teed up to be approved, so we're hoping that'll happen. But it will basically punt on that issue with regard to trails and say the trail owner can either ban them or allow them or do whatever they want. So I think as long as the speeds stay at that 15-mile-an-hour pace, then I think they're a good fit for bike trails. Some of the e-bike, you can tweak the settings, and all of a sudden you're going 30 on an e-bike. That seems a little fast to me for riding on a trail. But 15 is a good pace for a trail.
And some of the advanced bicycle riders, you know, human powered, well, they can move right along at
20 plus. Yeah,
most of those folks stay on the roads. I think that for the most part they stay on the roads and off the trails. But Umair, how are cities handling these scooters around the country? How are they handling on these bike trails? Because other cities have bike trails along rivers and old rail beds, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of cities do encourage scooter riders to use the bike trails. And, yeah, that is infrastructure that is designed to accommodate these faster speeds. And oftentimes that is where it's safer. The bigger issue, though, is that there's a lot of inexperience in terms of, like, what the etiquette should be. So for scooter riders, you know, they're often one-off riders, whereas cyclists tend to be people who are a lot more acquainted with, you know, using hand signals and, you know, passing on the left and, you know, appropriately engaging with traffic. Scooter riders may not necessarily know all those rules, and that's really where the hazards emerge, where you can't really tell what a scooter rider is about to do. And so that's really going to be the big frontier in terms of improving safety, is just developing a set of standards or best practices and trying to get everybody on a scooter to sort of behave in a way that's predictable that other drivers and riders can anticipate.
Let's go to the phones. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513. We're looking for you to share a scooter story. Do you ride one of these scooters? Do you like these scooters? Do you think they're a good mode of transportation, or have you been annoyed by how they operate in the city of Columbus? Sam, you're on the line. Sam from Clintonville. Go ahead.
Hi. Regarding the question of ambiguity, Ohio Code 4511.711 says, quote, no person shall drive any vehicle other than a bicycle on a sidewalk. And moreover, on the bird, it's got printed, don't ride on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
But on the pedal where your feet go.
Okay.
Well, we certainly would,
thanks
would,
for the call, Sam.
Would encourage the scooter riders to not ride on the sidewalk. It just creates a hazard. The speed differential between pedestrians and scooters is pretty significant. You can come up on somebody. We had a hit and run in Cincinnati where a bird rider hit a pedestrian and just dropped a scooter and took off. And so that, it creates some medical issues and liability issues.
Steve, was he correct on that code?
Yeah. There's now the question is, does an e-scooter qualify as a vehicle under the 45.1101 definition? I don't have the answer to that in front of me, but that would be the issue. Is this a vehicle, a motor vehicle? Is it even fit any definition of something under the code that exists already? So we have some issues with that.
Umair, this is the world we live in, that we have this disruptive technology, but is it a vehicle? I mean, it's like, is an Uber a taxi? This is the world we're living in these days.
Right. I mean, I think one of the more interesting things about the scooter, you know, phenomenon is that it's forcing a broader conversation about how we move around cities and like what kinds of rights that we can anticipate or what kinds of infrastructure we do actually need. And so, yeah, I mean, like scooters are a private company, but like they're using, you know, public sidewalks. Should they be taxed? Should they be billed for the sidewalk space that they use as a commercial vehicle would? Or, you know, are these like, you know, personal mobility devices that, you know, should be held to the individual? I mean, who is responsible in an accident? Is it the company behind them or is it the rider? And so there's a lot of legal gray area and that has to be kind of resolved and filled in. And then also it's kind of like forcing a reckoning as well as how we deal with cars, how much infrastructure we give to parking, to traffic rules, and by maintaining all that. So there's a lot of interesting questions being asked right now, and I think in the next few months we'll be seeing some interesting answers as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking scooters for an entire hour. Scooters. But it's the talk of the town here in Columbus as these scooters are all over the place. We'll continue our discussion, look at what the future of these companies looks like, and get the take of Smart Columbus. They're trying to innovate transportation here in the city of Columbus. We'll see if scooters fit into that plan when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. This hour, we're talking about the influx of those electric scooters, the Lime scooters, the Bird scooters. Who knows? Maybe another company that just popped in overnight, like those two did. The city is trying to regulate them. They're popular, but also causing some annoyance from some folks who don't like where they're parked. And perhaps if they've been had a close call as they walk down the sidewalk or as these scooters have driven along the side of the road. Still with us is Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law, Steve Magus. And joining us now is the Deputy Innovation Officer for the City of Columbus, Brandy Braun. You work with Smart City, Smart Columbus, whatever it's called.
I do, yes. I work for Smart Columbus.
Smart Columbus. Mm-hmm. So when you were planning Smart Columbus, which is looking at innovative technology for transportation, when this all started about 2 years ago, which page were motorized scooters that showed up overnight? Where did that come in?
That was not part of our application and not part of our playbook, but it certainly is. It certainly is now as we're learning as we go along.
So what was the reaction? I mean, this has become a sizable transportation mode here in the city.
It has. It has. And there may have been a little bit of surprise, of course, when the scooters showed up. But I think it represents a broader issue that we're dealing with that's really at the heart of what we're doing with Smart Columbus. And that is there are emerging technologies and mobility solutions that are in progress, that are happening and that will happen, that we as a city and as a region have to think about how are we going to harness these to have an impact on the quality of lives for our residents.
So what are these scooters? Good, bad, do we know yet as far as the city's transportation system is concerned?
I think as it relates to solving transportation challenges, we still have a lot to learn in terms of are they solving a true transportation need or not. I think the idea of the city being open and smart and our leadership acting that way and really being open to learning about these innovations and seeing how they can work to solve our real challenges, I think we're doing that, and the city should be proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, the city is putting up some regulations, but they don't want to go too far, correct? The city leaders have to strike the balance, because I think that these are popular, at least in this city. We have, because our public transportation system isn't as robust as more dense cities like New York and San Francisco. So the city officials have to walk a line here.
Our city's facing a number of challenges to which transportation and equitable access to mobility is a major piece of solving those challenges. So knowing that, being open to new mobility solutions, whether they be self-driving vehicles, e-scooters, microtransit options, we have to be open to learning about them, to piloting them, to learning how they can work for the city to solve our challenges. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to make sure we do it in a safe, thoughtful, and strategic manner as well.
Is the city, Brandy, is the city ready for these scooters? Because we do have bike lanes. They've been established on many streets. We have the great bike trail system here. We've become more bike friendly, both in terms of the facilities and the infrastructure for bikes. And also, I think you could argue in terms of drivers being more courteous, more used to bikes being on there. So this is kind of an extension of that.
It is. And I have two answers to that question. The first is around, I think as residents, we have to ask ourselves, are we ready? How are we making sure that we're being mindful, thoughtful about how we move around the city and how we're being mindful of each other, whether it's another vehicle, a pedestrian, a bike, or now a scooter? I think as we learn about these scooters and how people use them and how are they being used to solve real transportation challenges, then we have policy decisions to make as it relates to our built environment. So what things should we be planning for and doing to ensure that we're creating an ecosystem that's sustainable for all the mobility systems?
Steve Magus, does the city need additional infrastructure? Say, let's assume for a moment this is not a fad and it sticks around, because these things come and go. But let's assume these scooters stick around for 10 years. Does the city need to add some infrastructure to help them coexist with pedestrians, with bikes, with Ubers, in regular cars?
You know, there's a huge debate even in the bicycle advocacy world about infrastructure. And my personal view is that sometimes it works and sometimes they do it very poorly.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not needed at all. Cities such as downtown cities, again, as I said earlier, the traffic speeds are not 40 and 50 miles an hour. They're generally, 15 to 30 miles an hour. These scooters can fit on a normal road with normal traffic for the most part. I think eventually they're going to be ordered to stay towards the right and to do things like that to make some passing a little easier. But I don't know that more infrastructure is really the answer. I think what's going on, though, is the popularity of these things really points to the fact that there's a need. People want to get around.
Yeah.
People, there may be fun, but there's not a lot of people taking joyrides. They're actually using these things for transportation as opposed to a nice, mile circle where you go out and you take the kids out to do a little bike ride. These are actual transportation needs that are going unmet, and people are using these things to fill them. So that should be a wake up to somebody at the planning level to say, gee, there's a need out there.
Yeah, we heard Rick Ruan, the writer for the Dispatch, saying that his parking lot is five blocks away from his office in downtown Columbus, and he just hopped on the scooter to get from his car to his office. It cost him $2.
Right.
Maybe he was running late. Maybe he just didn't want to walk. I mean, I live about a mile from my nearest convenient COTA bus stop. I can see myself taking one of these scooters to get that 1 mile,
sure,
just to get on the bus. So, Brandy, this could be because one of the questions we have in our public transportation system. The buses don't go everywhere, so it can be hard to get from your house to a bus stop. Now, COTA has those great bike racks on the front of the buses. This might be a solution for that.
It certainly may well be. I mean, the first mile, last mile challenge, which that is known as, is a real challenge for not just Columbus, but cities across the country. And so we have to work collectively as an ecosystem to find ways to help solve for that challenge. And the scooters could possibly be part of that model. I think we still have a lot of data collection to do and some evaluation and learning, but I think we see that could be an opportunity.
Well, one nice thing with both the scooter model and the bike share model is that they generate data. You know, they have GPSs. You can city bike in New York and tell you exactly how many people have ridden, how many miles, and, you know, there's tens of millions of miles that they've put on those things.
And all this data is open to the public. We all can see it, and city officials can see it.
I don't know about that. I think it's more of but I know I can picture an article with a map of the city bikes, and they mapped the first 20 million rides, they mapped them, and then you could see the little bikes going at warp speed, and it shows you where they were riding and where they were picking up and dropping off and all that. And all of these companies have the ability to generate that data. So local ordinance could say, hey, you know, we'll let you do this, but you've got to share this with us. That could be part of it.
Yeah.
You know, they can be creative in terms of generating data.
Let's go to the phones. Danielle from Columbus, you have a question about scooters. Go ahead, Danielle.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I am generally in favor of improving our public transportation. I have to make one small complaint, which is that the scooters are a bit of an eyesore because they're littering yards and street corners. I think that's an acceptable nuisance or annoyance, so to speak, as long as they really are environmentally friendly. And I realize they're electric, but I'm curious. My question is, where do they go when they die? They seem to be pretty disposable.
You mean when they die for good or when they run out of battery? Or both?
Well, I guess, yeah, both. Let's answer both, maybe. Thank you.
I think I know the answer to what happens when they run out of juice or in the overnights when they have to be recharged. But do we know exactly what happens?
I've just read about the chargers. Yeah. You can make money signing up with Bird, and then they tell you where they are. You go get them and plug them in and put them back somewhere.
And they ask you to put them back in this location. Right. That's what I've heard, too, that you can volunteer to be a Bird caretaker overnight and plug it in.
I'm surprised from an aesthetic perspective they haven't teamed up with OSU here or somebody else to paint them, you know, scarlet and gray or pink or blue or something so that
I don't think if they try to paint them scarlet and gray, I'm sure the OSU trademark office would be all over.
Well, I'm saying they team up. In Cincinnati, we have the red bike. The city bikes are blue for a tactical reason because the sponsor is that color. So it's an advertising opportunity that they haven't hit yet.
Well, it's coming, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Brandy Brown from Smart Columbus, what about the clutter thing? Because they are, you know, the balance is you want them to be convenient. So you want them right outside your door. But do you want them outside that's also your neighbor's door, or perhaps your neighbor's driveway or the sidewalk where they have to walk in the morning? How do we deal with that?
Well, that was part of what the Department of Public Service and the City of Columbus is trying to get in front of as it relates to the rules and regulations that were released on Tuesday, to be sure that the companies that are operating the scooters understand where we want them to be, where they can be and can't be. And part of that is around the clutter aspect and making sure it's not an eyesore. But the other is making sure that our sidewalks and wheelchair ramps are accessible, because one person's mobility access option cannot impede the rights of another. And so we have to be mindful that we're keeping those spaces open.
Let's go to the phones. This is a hot topic for phone calls, and people have experiences with these scooters, good and bad. Brock, you're on the air.
Howdy. Thanks for having me. So my comment was just about the etiquette talk from before the break. And I, as an experienced runner in the area, through my time doing that, you learn how to behave on a sidewalk, on a bike path, passing people and that sort of thing. And I think one of the easy things for companies to do to encourage good citizenship amongst their scooter riders is maybe provide information when people sign up for these things as far as how you should handle yourself on either a crowded sidewalk or the passing on the left rules that other people are familiar with, riding in the roads and such. Mm-hmm. I just thought that that would be something that these companies could provide their riders to help promote their case for it's a fun and safe, effective way to get around town.
Thanks, Brett. Good point. I don't have the app. But Steve, you have the app.
Yeah, they have all kinds of information about safety and riding, and you should wear a helmet and don't ride.
This is the app for one of the scooter companies. Yep.
Right, and they also have a 23-page agreement that you sign when you sign up. I think I'm the only one in the universe who's read through most of that. Now
you're the attorney in the room, so there you go.
But yeah, they do. I mean, when you read through their app, it reads how you would like it to read, that you should do this safely. You shouldn't ride on the sidewalks. You should, shouldn't zip in and out of traffic and all those kinds of things.
And from a business perspective, they have to do that.
From a human courtesy perspective also,
but you don't want to become public enemy number one. It's not a way to stay in business in the city where you're operating.
Nor do you want liability lawsuits coming saying you didn't warn people that they shouldn't jump in front of buses.
So who is liable if there is an accident? You mentioned the hit and run in Cincinnati where somebody on a scooter struck a pedestrian and took off. So who's liable there?
Well, there's multiple questions in that question. Who's liable if the scooter rider gets hurt, for example? They get hit by a car. Then they can go after the person that ran into them. There may be comparative negligence issues if you're operating your scooter carelessly. If the scooter rider hits the car carelessly and leaves a big dent in the car and the car driver wants to get paid, there may be insurance coverage under the scooter driver's homeowner's policy, for example. I haven't heard of that. If I'm riding a bicycle and I do something stupid and somebody gets hurt and sues me, I have coverage under my homeowner's policy.
And then that long terms and conditions, what did it say? You're responsible if you get hurt?
There's you're waiving liability against them. You can't sue them. If you do, you have to sue them in California, and you go to a binding arbitration in California. You have a duty to report damage. You have a duty to fill out accident reports, and you're supposed to conduct a basic safety check every time you step up to the scooter. You waive libel claims in case they use your image somewhere. I mean, there's all kinds of 23 pages of rules here, but the big ones are it's a waiver of reliability and a release, just like you sign to go, rent something anywhere else.
When you ride the ride at Cedar Point.
Absolutely. And assumption of the risk and all of those kind of things. That doesn't mean you can't get around them because waivers are good for negligence claims, but not gross negligence, reckless, willful, those kind of things. It's tough proof.
Brandy, do you know the city says that they're going to limit the scooter companies, I think, to 7 or 8. Do we know if there are other companies out there that are looking to descend upon us?
I don't know the answer to that question.
There are other cities. Cincinnati have any other cities besides these two? Or?
Well, I've read just in prepping for this that there's like a dozen companies, but Bird and Lime are the two big players. And Bird is the money they've been able to raise for this project has been really amazing.
I think Lime has a light, correct, on their scooters, at least a rear light anyway.
I believe they do. And that was an issue in one of the cities that they wanted the scooters to be equipped with more motor scooter type devices.
Yeah, so you can ride them at night. I think Bird tries to pick them up so you can't ride them at night. So that's going to be an issue as the days get shorter. And, it's dark at 5:30 when you're trying to –
It's going to be an issue in winter, too, when we see how they can survive or not. Are they going to pick them up and bring them back in the spring?
Do they have snow tires for these scooters, do you know? Well, that's another thing.
Knobby tires are going
to
put on.
One more thing for the snow warriors to worry about here in Columbus is the scooters. We'll get John Hill, our traffic reporter, to give us a scooter traffic report. So this is – Brandy, this is just a technology that – we don't know it's coming until it's here, and how you have to as an officer with Smart Columbus, you have to be ready to deal with this. It's hard.
It is, but it's not. I mean, cities are used to dealing with hard issues, and this won't be the first time or the last time that cities deal with emerging technologies and has to figure out ways to make it work for them. And I think there's to go back to the conversation around data. I think there's a huge opportunity when we look at our smart city strategy that is rooted in integrated, holistic data, working with the companies that are here and that may come, and how we can use that data to make smart decisions.
These companies aren't going away anytime soon. CNN reports Bird is worth $2 billion. $2 billion. Those little scooters, $2 billion. Thanks to Steve Magus and Brandy Braun for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.